All right, everyone. Welcome to the Five Hole Fantasy Taxi Squad. It is February 1st, 2024. I am sure you are dying for some actual hockey, just like the rest of us on this All-Star pre-weekend. But more importantly, it's only 5 weeks until NHL trade deadline, which likely means even fewer weeks before your fantasy hockey league's trade deadline cuts off. Tonight on the Taxi Squad, Alan, Maddie K, and myself, Jay, are going to dive into some playoff strategy and trade targets to begin preparing for the 2023-2024 NHL fantasy postseason. Before we get into it, if there's anything we missed, feel free to hit us up on Twitter, get into the Discord, look us up on your preferred streaming platform of choice. Links to all of that and more are in the show notes. Fellas, how are we doing?
All right, man. It's always a good time when a Lightning player gets drafted and anything above an Avs player. Did I hear that right?
First overall, that was quite a shock. No, great. You know what? I'm still basking in the glow of this Elias Lindholm to Vancouver. I mean, Super Trade might be a little bit of an overreaction, but
big splash.
It's great to see a big move. Big splash, yeah. And, you know, I know we're talking playoffs in this particular episode, so we won't spend too much time talking about that, but certainly newsworthy and going on in the league right now. The good thing is he gets to join a whole bunch of his new teammates in Toronto for the All-Star game, so... Maybe they made the move nice and early so they can get some team chemistry going.
Yeah, that 3-on-3. Nothing screams team chemistry like 3-on-3, no defense hockey. Although, I think one curiosity and curious question, I guess, like right before we dive into the strategy too, I guess like this is not really just for Maddie K as the Vancouver fan, but just in general, do we see Lindholm having the better end of the trade stick, or do we think the vacated position by his first C position a better option for, you know, like Nazem Kadri is coming up, even like Mikhail Backlund, you know, like being able to jump up from the 3C to the 2C? I've always found that an interesting question. What do you guys think?
I mean, I think Kadri's having a good year, so I mean that might give him some additional opportunity in terms of minutes and people are going to shift up in that lineup, but overall losing Elias Lindholm doesn't make them a better hockey club. That's for sure. So I think it's going to be, I mean, Kuzmenko's going to get certainly more deployment in Calgary than he was getting in Vancouver. So I think that was actually really great of Rutherford to actually get him to waive what he had to move that player, knowing that that was a pretty difficult spot, you know, that he was on that 2-year deal. He wasn't performing when basically the entire rest of the team was. And to be able to pull some sort of value out of that, I thought was really great. Obviously, they paid a lot to get Lindholm in terms of the overall package. But I think for that package to include Kuzi was really a nice move.
Well, and I'm interested to see what this does for Huberto. Like to have someone, I don't want to say elite, but someone skilled to set up.
Yeah, he shot at that insane percentage all last year, right? I mean, the guy can finish. He just didn't play the way that Tocchet wanted him to play. And there's an embarrassment of riches of players that do want to play that way in Vancouver. So... he found himself not playing.
The other one, I guess, is it's official. I mean, I guess since the 8-2 drubbing of the Oilers on game one of the season, I don't think the Canucks are now thinking, oh, this is, you know, just points ahead, points bagged. I think they might be. The Vancouver Canucks might be contenders, boys.
They might be. I mean, listen, Edmonton ran the table in the month of January. And they gained 4 points on Vancouver. So, I mean, the Canucks, they didn't have the same month Edmonton had, but they had a heck of a month. And like we said, the PDO show just continues. So
wait, say that again?
They gained 4 points on them.
The Oilers have only gained 4 points on the Vancouver Canucks, despite winning 16 straight hockey games?
I feel like I'm testifying, but yes, that is exactly what I am saying.
That is... wow. If that is crazy. I don't... it's almost like weirdly the Canucks have completely fallen under the radar with that happening. It almost seemed like the only news from January was, oh, we traded for Elias Lindholm. I guess instead of just looking at the Canucks under a microscope, I guess we're going to zoom out and take a more bird's eye view of this entire situation. I guess, yeah, first, boys, what are your particular strategies coming in, you know, February 1st? You know, you're looking ahead at, you know, the current week, week 17. We're going to hit playoff hockey, fantasy playoff hockey in 6 weeks. What are your strategies? What are your thoughts going in to prepare?
I would say, as always, I'm more interested in the schedule. I always try to look at it from a meta level instead of, well, I need to try to get just week 23 locked down, and, you know, week 24 and 25 or whatever your finals could be could have completely different schedules. I would say quantity of games first, then quantity of off nights.
I like that. I like that. What about you, Matty K?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where this episode is going to differ a little bit from kind of what the listeners have come to expect from us over the last two-thirds of the season. Normally, we're talking about specific players, who's hot right now, who are we looking to extract value from, etc. In this particular case, though, because we're talking about, you know, 5 to 9 weeks out into the future, we're going to be talking a little bit more in terms of strategy. So, like to Alan's point, we're definitely going to be reviewing the schedule and seeing who has the optimal deployment over those playoff weeks that are so valuable for us. But then at the same time, we're going to take a look at players that we can look to acquire that are actually going to help you depending on where you are in the standings and are a realistic trade acquisition if you craft the trade in the way that we're talking about. So I think we're going to get into a little bit of strategy after we get into a little bit of the schedule talk. So yeah, Alan, let's hear a little bit about that schedule and what we can expect heading into those first couple weeks of the playoffs.
So for everyone out there, we're starting with weeks 23 through 25, and then we're going to do a separate section later on in the episode, and I'll make sure to mark those off in the show notes for weeks 24 to 26. So for weeks 23 to 25, best schedules are Capitals, 11 games, 5 off nights, Buffalo and Seattle, 10 games, 5 off nights, Arizona and Vancouver, 9 games with 4 off nights, Edmonton, we're back up to 11 games with 3 off nights, Ottawa, and with 10 games and 2 off nights. Now your worst schedules, and we'll get a little bit more of what you do with these guys. Chicago, not that there's anyone worth holding at the moment. 9 games with 1 off night. Montreal, Nashville, San Jose, and Winnipeg all have 10 games with 1 off night. And then Boston, Calgary, Detroit, and Minnesota all have 9 games with only 2 off nights.
Yeah, and of note, like we were in the preparation, we were talking about that week 24. I mean, Jay, this is probably music to your ears, but we talked about the ultimate streaming test that week 24 is going to be in terms of how that week is set up. Not only is it the semis in a huge amount of leagues, and I guess it would be the first week for any league that ends on week 26, but talk about throwing this together. 2 games on Monday, 12 games, 2 games, 14 games, and then 1 game, 15 games, and another 1 game. So all the off nights in week 24 combined add up to 6 games. So in terms of streaming options, like we said, there's going to be so many GMs that galaxy brain their way from heading right into the semis to fourth place by just trying to get too cute. I mean, there's so many implications to that. We just thought it was kind of interesting to note it's going to really limit the options. And in a lot of cases, you're going to need to have some flexibility on your roster. If you didn't have it going in for week 23, you are certainly going to need it for week 24.
Yeah, I think the phrase galaxy brain their way to fourth place is an incredible statement and way to describe it.
It's true. I just picture the Always Sunny GIF with just the math going and all the strings and Charlie just losing his mind. And that's exactly what's going to happen. You're going to somehow find a way to have, you know, a Vegas fourth liner on your roster, and it's going to cost
it's
you.
It's got to be. And I guess even if we want to break it down even further for our listeners, any like first year managers here. So when we talk about weeks 23, 24, 25, we're talking about any leagues, let's say a 12 teamer, 10 to 14, 10 or 14 teamer. So most of the times in week one, you are either going to be, if you are playoff relevant, you're going to be playing in your quarterfinal matchup, or you're going to have a bye, right? So week one, or I guess that quarterfinal, normally falls into week 23 or week 24. Correct me if I'm wrong, boys. I think week 24 is the Yahoo default. It's just that most league commissioners, and you know, as you play more fantasy, they
oh no no pull it 26 back. 26 right. End early so that you're, and we can get into that later, that your final isn't dependent on teams resting their studs.
Right, absolutely. So I guess, and we'll lay it out even further when we're describing it. So in week 26, that very final week that we'll cover later on, but the preamble to week 26 is that it covers 2 weeks. It's technically a week and a half. It ends on a Thursday. But week 26 is generally speaking when the regular season ends, right? It tapers off. And then since the regular season ends, most teams by that point have figured out if they are going to be real NHL playoff teams. And if you are playing, you know, you were the Edmonton Oilers, you have a 10 to 15 point lead. You're not going to catch up, let's say, to the Canucks, but you're also not going to be, you know, dropping down past the Flames. Is, aside from giving Connor McDavid an extra, you know, 5 assists over the next 2 games, is there any real reason for you to risk injury for a playoff run? No, there is not. So what is good for the NHL, I guess, actual franchise in terms of a Stanley Cup championship, is bad for you as a fantasy manager holding the player. So the reason for a lot of leagues, and I guess any future commissioners here, where you are running a week 24 quarterfinal, 25 semifinal, 26 final, and you still think that's the best move, just know that a lot of more seasoned managers, commissioners doing fantasy hockey, generally what we do is we scale it back and we just end the fantasy season earlier. Like, you don't want your league to be determined by, man, this sounds terrible, but you don't want Fogel.
Yeah, you should be pissed off if your final comes down to, oh man, Connor McDavid's resting the last 2 games. Oh.
And truthfully, if you were a real manager, you would not want to be playing McDavid and needing him to win you that last game in the season anyway. Neither should your league rely on him doing that. So that's the preamble that we're saying. Okay, so we're just week 23, 24, 25, but obviously it depends on your league and which shakes out to be the semifinal, quarterfinal, or final. But going back to what Matty K said, the reason in that schedule analysis and why we double back to week 24, no matter what, is that you'll realize week 24 and week 25 are actually the key weeks. Because no matter which way you slice it in your league, they will always be either a semifinal, quarterfinal, or final week. And damn, no matter what, those 3 weeks are critical and key. The other weeks that are tapering off, if anything, would be the week 23 and the week 26 week are interesting, because the week 23, if you are a top team, you don't have to play that week anyway. Those week ads are going to be saved functionally for you to be able to load up on your semifinal where you have a quarterfinal bye. Week 26 shouldn't matter either if your commissioner is already deemed that week not going to be a fantasy-relevant week. So your week 24 and your week 25 are your critical weeks. You are going to either win your championship or get into your semifinal through it, and there is no avoiding it. And unfortunately, just as Matty K described, yeah, that week 24, god damn it, you have 6 games across your 3 off nights. That's going to be... it's going to be a bloodbath is what it's going to be to get those players. I'll double back to you, Matty K. Can you talk about some general strategy for different parts of the league, or I guess the teams in the league?
We can do that, actually. What we're going to do is finish off the schedule component here. Just a few teams to pick out in that week to 23 to 25 period that have a pretty weak opponent schedule. So when we rank all of these schedules against one another, we can sort them by strength of opponent. And a couple of teams stand out as playing an entire opponent roster that has an aggregate record below 500 in those pretty critical playoff weeks for you. And that's Seattle and St. Louis. So both those teams play 10 games in between weeks 23 through 25. They both have 5 home and 5 away games. But Seattle has 5 off nights for their 10 games. whereas Seattle or St. Louis only has two. Seattle has averaged, like, their schedule leading into the playoffs is not really what's going to push you in. However, once you're in the playoffs, they really help you in the weeks going in. So they've got a lot of off-night help. St. Louis plays a lot down the stretch. So they close the season out playing four games in week 21 and four games in week 22, and then hit the playoffs with three games, and four games to cap week 25. So you're thinking about, if you're holding a Kyrou, a Thomas, a Buchnevich, those players are all above 75% in terms of ownership right now. You're probably holding them out down the stretch here. So just think about your own roster construction. They've now moved up into a category of player that you're probably not going to be moving off of them. The streams get a bit more interesting. The Shens, the Neighbors, the Falks, Perunovic, Krug, depending on who's on that.
I was going to say, who's healthy and who's on the power
play. Literally, yeah. But you mean, like, these options start to open up for us for a team that really gives us a favorable schedule at a time where you need it the most. But Jay mentioned something really great there in terms of the team that has maybe a bye and the ability to sit some players. Nobody's going to give you any production in week 23. So we start to get into sort of the strategy. How do you build a trade out? What's the anatomy of a trade this late in the season? And so the way that we got to look at this, fellas, is you really have to make your own market. This is something you're going to have to be proactive with in your own league. Very, very rarely is somebody going to come to you with an offer that's going to significantly help you in the position that you need it. So the first thing we had to do before we're going to have a discussion about this, because we need to really narrow the parameters a little bit. We need to really exclude actors in this discussion that really aren't going to influence the outcomes. And that's probably maybe the teams at the very top of the standings, who maybe for some reason don't want to be active at all. But I'm more thinking the bottom in a redraft here, because again, Keeper Dynasty is a very different beast, but we're talking about redraft. Those bottom three teams maybe in a 12, certainly bottom two teams. And if you get into a 14, 16 team league, maybe those bottom 3 to 4 teams that are significantly out, again, 5 weeks out to the remainder of the season. If you're down by 25, 30 points, I mean, mathematically, you get to a point where you are not going to get in and you can't really do anything with the capital, like with the players that you have. There's nothing you could do to really meaningfully increase your roster towards the end of the season. So you're kind of in a bit of a stuck mode there. So we isolate the only logical buyers at this point in the season are bubble teams. Anybody that's sitting right on the cusp of the playoffs and maybe plus or minus one or two spots. Those are the only players that would be logical to buy because they have to get in and they have to make moves to do that. So if you're a bubble team, perspective is going to matter significantly in this conversation, because if you're a bubble team, you are going to value certain players very differently than if you're, say, for this example, the top team that gets a bye. So if you're a bubble team, you have to get into the mindset that you're going to be selling future production on your roster for present day production. And you have to understand that that will not be a one for one trade. You have to accept that to a degree. I mean, again, we're not talking about a lopsided opportunity here, but you have to accept that what you're selling down the road, you are not going to get 100 cents on the dollar for. A, because it hasn't happened yet. And B, it doesn't have value to you yet because you're not there yet. If you were confidently in a position where you're in and you have a buy, you might not value it at 100 cents on the dollar, but it might be more like 95. 98 cents. If you're a bubble team, there's no way on earth you can be that confident that that production is going to help you in any meaningful way. And so we take a look at where those players are. And if you're a top team, you have the luxury of taking a look at maybe a team that plays a lot down the stretch, but not really a whole lot during the playoffs. And if you happen to have a medium to high value player on that team, all of their production that they're going to generate down the stretch and into that first round has zero value to you. You're already in the spot where you are. You're comfortable enough where they're probably not, if you lose them off your roster, they're not going to meaningfully impact where you sit in the standings. But more importantly, you want to be able to turn that zero value present day production into something tangible future value for your roster. And those two, the overlap of that beautiful Venn diagram, is our market of buyers and sellers at this point in the season in a redraft. So it sounds kind of tacky to think about it in that way, but I promise you, like, you have to be able to have the right conversation with the right GM. Because if you fire off the right offer to the wrong GM at this time of the season, you're kind of going to show your hand a little bit. And the reality is, you're going to need to make this market. And you're probably going to have to convince the person on the other side of this trade why it's beneficial. And even maybe why you're sending the trade in the first place, right? So you have to be able to explain that position. But this, there's probably other scenarios, but this is the most likely market to be found in your individual league right now. So if you're a top team, you're going to look to move a weaker schedule talent that are play a lot of games leading into the playoffs, and you're looking to target bubble teams that need that production. So from there, guys, I'm going to maybe swing it over to Jay a little bit here, but we're going to talk at least about a couple of these teams that have pretty good schedules week 21 and week 22, and then get into the idea of who maybe a movable star would be on some of these rosters, a reasonable trade target that could help you. And then we'll talk a couple trades.
Building on what Matty K was mentioning, right? Like you, when you think as a listener, obviously, when you think of your potential trades or other, I guess, potential moves you could make, we talk about trades right now mainly because the trade deadline is so pressing. And further, the trade is going to be mainly what you can do to try to significantly shift and alter your team's composition and construction. On the flip side, when it comes to streamers, I think that closer to the day, you'll be able to tailor and target your team a little bit further. If you are at the top of your team and table, you can sacrifice, you know, an extra win in week 21, an extra win in week 20, but you can get players that can almost guarantee or up, just as Alan mentioned, your quantity and possibly, hopefully, your quality if you can get and swing the right trade. And further, if you're a bubble team, exactly as Matty K said, you don't have that top team luxury. You are entirely stuck in the, you know, like, I don't know if there are any League of Legends players out there, but you don't want to be double lift saving flash, right, till the next season. You want to be the player that is able to access and use the teams and talents and players and all the metrics immediately. So, on that angle, if you are at the cutting point, right? You're going to roll in and you need to win the last 2 weeks to get you in, and that's it or not. Teams with good week 21 schedules, Arizona, Calgary, they got 4 games played, 2 off nights. Florida, St. Louis, same thing, 4 games played, 1 off night. A couple of those teams would be good to have earlier on in terms of, I guess, a strong bubble team playoff push to try to get you in over the hump, over the finish line. Same thing for week 22. If you, I really hope you don't leave it that last minute to try to get into your playoffs, but if you have a Winnipeg, LA, St. Louis, Detroit, they all play 4 games. Winnipeg has 4 off nights in week 22. If you're leaving it, I mean, I really hope it's not, because if they have 4 off nights, I'm assuming that means Winnipeg, week 22, Sunday night, if you're relying on Kyle Connor to do some shit that night in order for you to get in to the dance, you, my friend, have certainly not left your, you've left your home.
I'd say, especially looking at their 23-25 schedule, Winnipeg is, yeah, they're middle of the pack with 10 games, but they only have 1 off night. Like, Kyle Connor is exactly the kind of player, if I'm top of table, that I use as trade bait.
Exactly. Yeah, Kyle Connor. Oh, my goodness. And Alan, I guess we'll roll over onto you too, like with players that you might consider in target for trade bait. But yeah, Kyle Connor, think about these big dogs and players when we mention these names as well. So when we're talking about Arizona and Calgary, Calgary is a great one, especially with this recent trade. Look to see how that play, look to see how that those minutes and time on ice and power play time shakes out with the loss of a top 1C, top power play 1 guy. Arizona, right? It's basically been the Clayton Keller show all of last season, especially rolling into the last 3-2 months in the previous season in 22-23. Do we foresee that? Do we foresee a strong second half finish the same way for Clayton Keller? And would you want to be on the upswing with that? Or do you think that was just in the pan?
Didn't we just say they had one of the better schedules? Yeah. I'd say no. Clayton Keller is probably, I don't know, middle of the pack on someone's roster. That's probably someone you could pry from someone if you wanted to. That'll both help you later on and help you get in.
Keller might be built in a lab for this discussion, to be honest with you, just based on the way, the schedule Arizona has down the stretch versus what they're going to give you in the playoffs, which again is kind of middling, three games, nothing of note. Like you said, off nights aren't spectacular. So somebody that has Clayton Keller, again, he's not driving your lineup. And, we'll touch on it briefly, but you really have to identify who's a movable star in your league. So you're not going to get somebody, especially in a redraft, that's going to trade you David Pastrnak or Nathan MacKinnon. That is not going to happen. So who can you get? And as you mentioned, who's a really, really, really good player, borderline elite player maybe, but is still gettable? And there's a short list of those players at this point in the season. And you mentioned one, Kirill Kaprizov is definitely one of those players that, of course, he's elite. Of course, it's going to take a lot to get him. But he's not glued to the roster of the owner because Kaprizov isn't the reason. If they're in a position where you're in first through third, but certainly in those two buy positions, Kaprizov hasn't really driven you there. The last maybe 2 to 3 weeks, for sure, he's been great leading into the break, but not really a ton leading up before that with a lot of injuries along the way. So I just think for him, you might like to have him, but if you really took a look at the production he's going to give you, a lot of it's going to be down the stretch and that first week of the playoffs, which is of very little value to you. So what I guess the question would be, I think he fits the mold of a movable player. What could you get for him? Like we just mentioned, Shifley. He's kind of in the same boat in terms of Winnipeg. They don't necessarily play a whole lot, but we're trying to think of what's a combination you could put together. And maybe with that Kaprizov move, you're also looking to open up a roster spot, right? So there's a lot of strategy that could go into that, but those are some of the players. It's just great you mentioned Kaprizov because he was literally on the short list of guys that we had mentioned before, but you know, who are players that you could realistically look at to acquire?
Well, could we do Kaprizov or Keller? Do we think someone might take that?
Kaprizov is, in terms of one-to-one value, way, way beyond Keller.
Obviously, I think.
But I would also caveat that with this, which is, in general, we should outline and definitely harp in on the Minnesota Wild. Because the Minnesota Wild, they have a what? 3-2-4 weeks 23, 24, 25 schedule, notably a two-game schedule in the deadly either quarterfinal or semifinal week 24. So Minnesota,
well, across like all three of those weeks, they only have two off nights. Like, so there's a chance you could bench Kaprizov or you would play him at the expense of someone else.
Right. So you would obviously never bench a Kaprizov given the option, but obviously, if he's only playing two games, you're really hoping that he hits a hat trick in both games, right? So I think Minnesota, if like listeners straight up like falling on completely with what Matty Kay's mentioned, Kaprizov is probably, if anything, the headline name on this pod in terms of 23-24 strategy. You have to trade your Kirill Kaprizovs and grab a solid, rephrase. If you're a top team with the luxury of not needing those weeks ahead rolling in to the end of this season, trade Kirill Kaprizov and get a star, similar star with a good schedule. Oh, actually, I'm pausing now and realizing because that's exactly what Alan was mentioning with trading away Kirill Kaprizov and snagging back Clayton Keller. That strategy should be explored.
Or Nuge, like the top of the table best playoff schedule for 23-25.
I would do it.
Kaprizov or Nuge is.
I think I would more consider that one.
Yeah, now we're having a conversation for sure. That's definitely worth considering.
Yeah.
I mean, Nuge's got to be the only really viable option that you could acquire.
Because I mean, in that Edmonton core. That door to trade for McDavid or Drysdale's been closed for months. Hyman's having a season. You may and not get Bouchard.
No, I don't think so. Realistically, as it, just positional value alone, right? So that leaves Nuge, right? He's really that only available piece. And he's kind of fits the mold of what we were talking about. He was, I mean, his preseason rank was 54 in Yahoo. He's currently ranked, I mean, in my one league, he's 80. And Kakupful, he's like 85 to 100 in terms of overall rankings. So he's certainly not the 104.53 power play point guy, you know, that he was last year. He's probably an 80 to 85 point guy this year. He's pacing for about 30 power play points. So he, to me, fellas, honestly, it looks like he's a tad, if you can say it, unlucky. Like his IPP and his power play IPP are both down over 10% year over year. He's playing the same 20 minutes, if not a little bit more time on ice per game this year. Expected goals 4 per 60 is like over 4, which from a league perspective is a really strong number. So to me, all of that is just a little bit of bad luck for Nuge. So like if you're looking to acquire a player like him, you want to bank on the fact that the owner that has Nuge right now obviously understands his value down the road, but maybe they don't necessarily have the luxury of waiting for the production in weeks 23, 24, 25, because they might not be there. So that might be the opportunity to move and start a deal. It might not be a one for one, but the core of that deal being winger for potential winger, Nuge for Kaprizov, and you start to kind of fill in the blanks. But I just, it's not a slam dunk. Nobody's going to go out necessarily and replicate, but I just mean like that's the anatomy of how you're going to build something that actually has the potential to work at this stage of the season.
To be fair, Kaprizov as well, in addition to, you know, possibly trading Kaprizov for Nugent Hopkins or even Keller. When the more I think about Keller, the more I think that Kaprizov with single wing eligibility for a dual eligible, still top line, still power play one driver with all the off nights. Maybe Clayton Keller isn't that bad too. But Alan, I guess
that's where you can just mention the, man, Minnesota's got that sweet schedule, you know, he'll get you in.
But I mean, Kaprizov is not the only Minnesota Wild that is worth trading. And Alan definitely can speak more to that too.
Oh, yeah. So Jay's referencing a trade I just made in the Listener League. I was able to get Jeek in a different trade. And then I turned around and flipped Jeek, Fiala, and Blake Coleman for
Zibanejad
and McCann.
And I think that trade was complete. Now, for the anatomy,
it's an overpay. No doubt it's an overpay. But now I've opened up a streamer spot, which I was struggling to find. And I own a player that I'm more excited about in Zibanejad.
And more notably...
Yeah, for sure. And maybe... Yeah, go ahead,
and Jay. More notably, the two-game week 24 Minnesota Wild schedule that now, come playoff time, should the team that just acquired Jeek get there, you're only going to get 5 games of Jeek across 2 weeks in critical quarterfinal and semifinal plays, right?
Poison pill, baby.
Poison pill indeed. And mind you, at the same time, I think Matty K touched on it earlier where Minnesota has a bad week 23-24 schedule, but they don't have a bad schedule leading up into the playoffs.
Yeah, it's pretty solid, actually. Yeah, like I say, they play 14 times week 19 through week 22. So in those 4 weeks, you're going to get, on average, 3.5 games from them, which is pretty good. And so that's a team you could rely on, like we say, down the stretch. They're just, that value is going to evaporate pretty quickly once you get to week 24.
Right. And so managers, like listeners, you will have to adjust and think, right? You might be honestly in, you know, 8th place, 7th place right now, and it's looking touch and go. It's looking tetchy for whether or not you can secure that final spot, exactly that bubble playoff position. If you get and trade for a Minnesota Wild player, that could be the difference between you making the dance or you staring forlornly on the outside window looking in. And on the flip side, the trade-off you're going to have to make in terms of getting a Minnesota Wild is if you don't make that trade, you might not make it in. But if you make that trade, you're just going to have to deal with the possibility that, you know, a lot of your top talent and top star players in that production is not going to have the games output unless you get to the finals where they have played four games. And
you know. Well, yeah, like you could trade away that future production and it could come back to bite you. But the person that acquires it, A, doesn't get to reap the benefit of that until well into the future when a lot of things could happen between now and then. You get what you need right now that's going to help you get in. And fellas, like, given the structure of week 24 being the semifinals, like, there's a significant likelihood that somebody like Logan O'Connor finds a way to, like, this happens every single year. You could structure your lineup to have the optimal deployment, all the line one power play guys you want, one injury, one illness, one flu away from Logan O'Connor being the stream of the year, and you're out. Like, so you have to, that's an outcome as well that you have to prepare yourself for. So I just think that there's no certainty in buying those week 24, week 25 potential producers for you, because we know a lot can happen between now and then. So it's kind of nice to be able to trade, like we said, pull forward some of that future production value and turn it into something real and tangible right now that's going to help me. And if you can manage to do that and create that market for the trade that we mentioned, that's putting you in the upper echelon of your league.
Yeah, and I'm just going to harp one more time on the Minnesota train too, because I know there's Kaprizov that we mentioned, and we mentioned Zeke, and I think those guys are just top dudes. Oh man, I just forgot Boldy, I guess, has also had like a pretty hot little month for a section too. Yeah, he's somewhere there.
If you're playing that round of roulette where you're riding Matt Boldy to win it all, pass.
Yeah, hard pass indeed. Or
I will go on and get Zuccarello over Matt Boldy.
Zuccarello. Yeah. There's Minnesota's got a lot of names that you can really like harp onto and name. And the other one too, Brock Faber, right? Like the
darling. I was going to say Brock Faber would probably be one of your pickups of the year if you're a bubble team.
No, absolutely. Right. Like if, you know, Bedard doesn't roll back at any point soon, like my goodness. Yeah. Brock Faber is exactly, you know, the guy that.
Right. Adam Fantilli out for, you know,
yeah, two months. But taking Faber's, you know, basically, you know, rocket ship out of the gates career that he's had and just selling high. Like we talked about on the last episode of this same show, like how difficult it is to sell when a player's at a peak of their value or what you perceive to be a peak of their value. And with Faber, knowing what his playoff schedule is going to look like, he's obviously, if you have, like, he's probably one of your top D, like maybe a third D, a fourth D, maybe a second D, depending on how deep the league is. So he's a really valuable addition to your roster since he joined, but he's not going to help you when you really need him down the stretch. And you know that now.
Well, do we, so another team that we pointed out with a good schedule, do we think we could do Faber plus for someone like Dahlin?
Yes.
Yeah, Buffalo's another one. That's right. I mean, I think Buffalo's almost in a similar position as Minnesota would be. Like Buffalo, what do they play down the stretch? Weeks 20 through 22, they play
highest amount of off nights.
Yeah, 4-3-3. So basically, again, like we want that down the stretch production. So I'm thinking like if we were going to move Faber, somebody that would move Faber would have picked him up. Probably a top, I mean, again, likelihood of being a top team in the league that picked him up as a streamer and you kept him. And now he's a valuable piece, but like, he's not your core. He's like a really good guy that you picked up, but you could certainly craft a trade to a bubble team that might need all of those games and potential production from Faber. It really has not a whole lot of value to you. In your present position in the league. And so that's where I think we could look at. You know, we brought up the news example of a team that's on the opposite side of that, but target teams that play in that week 24, week 25 period, you need and see if you can pull some value out of Faber because you're trying to capitalize on everything that he's done, but you know, most of his helping to your roster has already occurred.
I really like that phrase. Most of the helping to your roster has already occurred. And it's so true because
Oh, some of my best wording. That's right. Yeah.
No, but it's so good because imagine, for example, that Minnesota stack, right? Just think Kaprizov, Jeek, Brock Faber. Here, sure, let's throw in Zuccarello and Matt Boldy. Let's play around with those five players, and somehow I don't know how likely it would be for any manager to have all, okay, definitely not all, but let's say any combination of those players. If you packaged and somehow had a deal with, let's say, Kaprizov or Jeek, and you added Brock Faber, maybe Jeek and Brock Faber would be insufficient to move the needle, but with name recognition, Kaprizov plus Brock Faber, do you think if you threw in, a borderline waiver wire ad in Darlene that...
Like a Blake Coleman.
Like a Blake Coleman. Do you think the Darlene owner might bite? I don't know if that's a hard yes, but maybe that's where you start packaging along and adding sweeteners or losing a bit on either side, as long as you get, Jeek is what, top 15 right now? Like, Jeek is...
Yeah, he's elite.
He was like 15, year. Top 20.
Right, he's like top 15, top 20, as Darlene is.
Somebody too. Might just be ride or dying with Jeek just because you drafted him nowhere near that, so he's like fool's gold. So, like, literally, just hold on to him. Figure it out around him. Right. Again, don't galaxy your brain your way into having to make more decisions. Like, just leave him there and figure it out. But if it's not somebody that's a top 20 player in your entire league, well, now you don't just have to leave them there. There's a real decision to make. Like, how much value do you actually bring me in the time where I'm going to need you to bring me it? And if the answer is not very much because you're going to be on the bench or your team doesn't play much or whatever, then exit strategy. Like, plan it out. You gotta find a way to get that person off and your roster. And I was going to say, like, we just spent a bit of time talking about Darlene. I think maybe the more reasonable, I can't believe we're saying this in heading into the All-Star break, but the more reasonable Sabre we should be talking about is Tage Thompson.
Yeah.
So, again, he's on a 59-point pace, which is a cool dash 40 from the 99 points he put up last year. All right, he's 34-point power play points last year. He's on a 15-power-point pace this year. His time on ice is the same. Power play deployment's the same. Shots on goal are down a bit. Actually, more his shots on goal are basically where they were at in 2021, a little over 3, whereas last year he was just a bit under 4. So that's a pretty significant decline. He's also not really converting at the level he was last year. The last couple of years, he's been about a 15% shooter on average, and this year he's actually a bit under 11. It's like 10.8 or 10.9.
And I would say, if anything, coming the real trade deadline, he'll probably have even less competition for his minutes.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, Buffalo's going to have to do something, and they're...
I mean, I've heard Tuck's really name thrown out. Like, he's someone that could be on the move, and he's someone who regularly plays with him.
Yeah, so, I mean, so you're talking about a guy who's, again, expected goals 4 per 60 are down, like over half a goal year over year. So all of this is, again, we're not... This might sound bleak. This is by design. You are trying to pick up an asset at a very depressed value. Right. So understand there's risk in that. Of course, Tage Thompson could just be the 60-point player that he's been, and he's going to finish off with 20 goals, and that's really not going to help you very much. But
a 60-point player you can play on more off nights is probably more valuable than the Kaprizov you either lose opportunity cost on.
100%.
And that's the variance that we talked about that you have to accept. There's a range of outcomes, and in this case, a pretty sizable range of outcomes, where you make that trade for Tage Thompson and he doesn't really help you that much and you don't make the playoffs. But there's a significant range of outcomes where he does help you and a lot more than the player that you're trading away, right, in order to get him. So again, like, that's where we're trying to isolate a very specific scenario here. But I think Tage is interesting because there's no way on earth anybody would have had this conversation about Tage Thompson. I mean, what, offseason, even right, partway through this year, like, it's really just been kind of a sustained meh from Tage all year long. And, now you're at the point where, like, if you're the Tage Thompson owner, he's center, right? I believe he's center, yeah, center or center
right
left wing.
Center right wing.
Center right wing. Okay. So you've replaced him essentially on your roster. Like, he's there and he's playing when he's been healthy, but you've found other production around him. If you're in a position where you could potentially consider trading him, like, I don't know, maybe you picked up a Reinhardt or, fell into another player, Vetrano early in the season that just kind of carried you up. And like, you're just at a point now where, like, I'm probably not going to do it, but I'm also not saying I'm not going to do it. So, and you get yourself into a spot where maybe you can entice an offer to that player and build it around that case. Like, I need his production when he's going to do it way more than you do. And here's why. And here is a player that, again, I would love to have. If I'm in week 25, I'm going to kick myself in the ass for trading him to you. But I don't have the luxury of being able to think that way right now. We can look at the exact same player, all three of us. And if you're in the bottom third and I'm in the middle third and Jay's at the very top, that player has wildly different values to us in terms of our roster. And so I think that's the kind of the tricky part of all this, the intricacy of it. But I love it. It's the strategy behind making a deal work.
And I'm even going to say, and I know Craig harped on me early in the preseason when I said it, but I don't think, or at least I think the problem with Tage, it's a similar concern reasonably mentioned with like Stutz the last year with getting 90 points as well. It's just once there's a breakout season, there always is the concern of repeatability, right? Like it's been repeated so many times across seasons, like Meyer.
The Timo Meyer curse.
People were doubtful of Meyer and then he kept going, right? Like the season afterwards, and then he changed situations and teams, and then what the hell happened? People were really doubtful of Draisaitl the first year he broke out, and then he's just continued onwards since. It's not a tricks of the trade. I don't know what the idiom is exactly, but
yeah, you're kind of a victim of your own past success, right? People's expectations of your production is going to be largely determined about what they know you did. And if, again, like Stutz is a great example. He's been in the league 1 year, effectively, and it was amazing. So, of course, this year, it's like, yeah, Timmy Stu, 95 points, same thing as last year. Of course he is. And, you know, he's doing very well. But is that a reasonable expectation in hindsight?
Right.
Maybe. But, you know, odds are good he's probably going to find his level a little bit as a young player on a team that we've seen is not very good.
Right.
He can be individually valuable to us, but...
And I think reasonably, too, like, if you look back at the team, right, you look at Tage still, he's still, I mean, he's getting the power play one time, but they're really spreading the ice out now, too, right? So it's kind of an interesting one when you're looking...
But again, like I said, they're going to be sellers come real trade deadline, so right. I think those minutes rebound.
Right.
And maybe, you know, maybe he finishes a little higher. Maybe he finishes at 70 points. But,
right.
No, the opportunity, I think, is there down the stretch.
Well, I'm in a Buffalo-adjacent market. And I can tell you from just the media that comes out and the general commentary around the team, like, there's not a lot of positive things going on for that club right now in terms of just the general approach. Not like not even just, I know Granato is on the hot seat because the team's underperforming, but the reality is the roster didn't really do anything year over year.
What they had,
all like, they did was Eric take players Johnson. And say, you know what, you guys were, well, yeah, like you guys were good. We're going to give you a lot of money because we think you're going to continue to be good. And that's what we're going to rest our hopes on. And that's largely what they did. And they missed the playoffs by one spot. So I guess they figured the bags of money will help with that 1 point. And they haven't at all. And the same problems that they've had in other years. It's just they're another one of those teams where the individual pieces are so much more value than what they put together collectively as a group. And to me, that always screams coaching. We saw that in Edmonton. But man, it can't always be coaching in Buffalo. Like, They've just gone through so many options there. The roster's too good for them to be this bad. And Ottawa's kind of in that same spot,
yes,
too.
Yes, even Jeff Skinner.
And I think looking at that roster again, the only other concern would be, like, who is going to compete with Tage to grab those minutes, right? Like, right now.
Exactly. I mean, if anything, you know, let's say they move Tuck. Like, who do they move up? Like, do they move up Cousins? Great.
Like, they have nobody else. Like, are you really going to play Greenway?
Well, maybe one of the kids, too, though. They've been, like, Paterka and Benson have played well. Paterka really has showed out pretty well. I mean, the last four games, he's been pretty hot. He's scoring. He's firing a ton of pucks at the net. You know, line two, power play two. I think with Buffalo, the interesting thing is when they're going to have a favorable schedule, outside of a couple of core players, there's a lot of ownership and streaming opportunities for Buffalo players. So they're definitely ones, again, sort of in that category of it'd be kind of ridiculous of us in week 17, 16, 17 to be saying, here's a player you need to acquire in week 24 going into week 25. So as we mentioned kind of earlier, right, we're mostly talking about teams, setups, opportunities, kind of strategy, because it's really hard to dig into individual streams. I think, you know, players that we can expect sizable production from, we
you
can
know, be a little obviously bit more we're going to release that week's content when it comes to that.
That's right. Like closer to, that's right. That was when we'll be able to understand, you know, which Vegas player do I want to own this week? Or,
right? Because if Eichel's not back,
like which Carolina goalie is playing?
Nick Roy, Nick Waugh.
True. Oh, I'm going to take a wide cut here too. I know we mentioned it before. So similar to how we're describing trading, and there are certain teams to target with, again, easy mention before, Arizona's got pretty decent schedule as well. Look to see, right? Like, look to see what the early trade targets, Clayton Keller, right? We also mentioned Winnipeg, for example, has a great, I guess, week 22 schedule, but a pretty middling, especially low on off nights, weeks 23 to 25 schedule. So maybe players like Kyle Connor, maybe players like Shifley, those kind of guys, you can kind of maybe see if you can package and trade away, so to speak. I'm also going to say, take a close scrutinizing look at your own league. And I think by the end of the episode, at least determine for yourself if you think you're going to be top team. You know, like, I'm sorry, everyone wants to be top team. But the reality is there's going to be 11 out of the 12 teams, or, you know, 13 out of the 14 teams, 9 out of the 10 teams that are not going to be top dog, right? So if that's you, that's fine. You can still win the dance. You can win the dance at the end of the day, but you need to identify first what advantages you're going to have. So one, are you going to be that top dog with the buy and the luxuries of choosing, you know, which players to target and which not? And the second one is, let's say you've identified your bubble team. Let's say you're identified that you're a top team. Try to play with that crystal ball further and try to see and guess and, you know, do some probability factors or whatnot and run a simulation or something, or, you know, just guess and check, guesstimate. See where you end up in terms of predicting your playoff opponent. I mean, I think we touched on it before too, and this is a real possible galaxy brain, so I'm going to preempt that and say that, but imagine you were able to predict accurately that you were going to face Nathan MacKinnon. Now, the question is, you're not going to be able to trade for Nathan MacKinnon, because Nathan MacKinnon is probably the sole reason he's even there. But do you think...
And you're probably not trading for MacKinnon or Rantanen.
You're probably not trading for Rantanen.
Or Makar.
Or Makar. But the question is there any sort of way you can package or trade for any player that's around in that sort of periphery? I mean, come to think of it.
Hopefully you picked up Lekkonen a week or two ago, like me.
I guess it is probably, yeah, you got to pick up Lekkonen, right? So you're thinking ahead this early, right? So see if you have that IR plus spot. And the other question is, if you're really going to play, you know, with your cards super close to your chest, is there a trade you could package for a Rantanen or a Makar? What would you give up, so to speak, to acquire that sort of peripheral, I guess, not sandbagging, but you almost want to limit the exposure, or I guess the radiation exposure you could have from facing Nathan MacKinnon for an entire frickin' week.
I don't know, man. I feel like, in the words of Thanos, you'd have to give up everything.
you would. And there's that, it's just dripping with bad karma to me, like, to be projecting out, like, you know what? I'm pretty confident that I'm going to be facing Allen here in the semifinals. Like, with a big caveat here, if this is like a home league that you've been in for 20 years and it's always the same two people that end up in the final or something, like, that's a very different story. Go for it. But if this is a more competitive league where you got a bit of balance, I think that's...
I just focus on the meta. Like, just
and,
trying to
and
get
and
that
you
schedule.
Can always handcuff, to your point, right? A Logan O'Connor can spoil that. Like, you're not going to usually get production dollar for dollar, but if every 4 points Mac puts up, you get one or two from the stream.
Oh, no, yeah. Even last season, I faced the MacKinnon Rantanen owner in the semis. Like, I picked up I picked up everyone. I was picking up Rodriguez. I hated, like, these second, sometimes third line guys. I was just like, all right, if anyone else touches the puck, I'm in on
Devon
it.
Taves, do something!
Or I guess maybe now that I think of it, one way of exposure, I guess it depends how much you value goaltending and the like as well, but Georgiev is probably way more obtainable than any of those top three guys mentioned. And Georgiev, if you value, well, I mean, if the, just like in the Listener League, you value goalie wins, then that's an incredible way to acquire, I guess, exposure to those top kinds of players. And they extend everywhere in the entire league, right? You see Boston, for example. You want exposure to Pasta. I don't know if there's any other player that really, maybe exposure to Marchand, but so Boston, you got Pasta over there. Tampa is an incredible. I'll
say McAvoy in Boston. He's McAvoy, probably someone McAvoy you can well. For on that.
Charlie Coyle.
But Tampa is an incredible question to list as well, right? You have the top guy in the league, best player in the league right now, Nikita Kucherov, and then
that's right. Put some spec on his name.
You got the best player in the league, or at least in the East, right? Like in Nikita Kucherov, and then you got who else, right? There's Stamkos riding shotgun, point center in that line,
and their schedule too, right? Like, I mean, down the stretch, I can't it's see a team that has a worse schedule. No, like they're the worst,
right?
They play twice in week 21 and twice in week 22. So again, like if there's a couple players where this is irrelevant, obviously Point, Stamkos, or sorry, you know what? No, there's a Mendoza line here. Point, Kucherov, we're not having this conversation. Probably both of the D, right? Hedman, Sergachev, probably same thing. Maybe Stamkos is where you have a conversation with that owner. Right. To say, like, what are you going to, that's the asset back to our previous example. That would be the asset the bubble team is looking to move. Right. This is not going to help me. It'll like the optics of trading Steven Stamkos are not great, but to the playoff, you know, the team that's comfortable and looking to bolster their roster, that four games in week 23, 24, 25 is very valuable to them. And again, it would sting, but could you get something for Steven Stamkos that really helps you? And maybe you add 30%, 20% of the starts that you were going to get from Stammer to begin with. I mean, that's the type of conversation you're going to have. They're going to be hard. This isn't easy. Like we're talking about trading really good players that probably got you partially to where you are. But I mean, you can't keep them all. And Stamkos has been very good, but just checking some very quick rankings on him right now.
I was going to say, he's down.
He's been like really, really good.
Last season.
I mean, he's 40th in the Keeping Carlson League, right around where he was drafted. So you're getting to that point where it's going to take a hell of an offer. But that schedule will matter. Again, to somebody who's a bubble team, you get four games of whatever he's going to give you in the two most important weeks of your season. And anything he could do for you beyond that point is irrelevant to you because you are not there. And maybe that's where the deal starts.
I would go a step further and say Tampa, in a similar vein to Minnesota, has some real tough questions to ask as well, because while Minnesota is offering top dollar, obviously it's garbage dollar come playoff time, but they're offering top dollar in the weeks leading up. The suckiest part is if you're a bubble team, you need that week 22 and week 21 and week 22 win two games from Tampa in consecutive week 21, week 22s. But even if you're going to say no worries, guys, I am a seasoned top dog. I am, you know, like the seasoned top dog is going to maximize and optimize for semifinal production in week 24, where Tampa again has friggin' two games. So that's going to be a sting in the butt if you're trading, you know, for the optimized schedule. I don't give a shit if they play four games in week 25 if I'm playing for the top, you know, like best loser, or I guess like best semifinalist. No, that's not how it works. And then the second part is, if I was a bubble playoff team and I needed to win going in, their four games in week 23 don't help me because of the aforementioned two games in week 21, two games in week 22. So Tampa, if anything, too, I don't know if I'd go as far as Al's description of the poison pill for Tampa, but it's going to be an interesting... Fellas, what do you think? Like, would you trade if you were a bubble team for Tampa for that reason? But would you also trade for Tampa players if you were a top team with a bye?
No, I'm not moving Cooch. As a bubble team, no, I'm not moving Cooch.
No. We said the conversation starts at Stamkos.
Maybe Stamkos for Nuge really, could guess, be...
Yeah, I mean, that could be the only other player really that's of value at this point right now looks to be Hagel. I mean, Nick Paul runs into, like we said, he has a couple of random two-goal games.
He's your stream.
Out of nowhere. He's the stream. Yeah, streaky guy. But, like, yeah, Hagel looks like he would be a notch below, obviously, Stamkos. But somebody, again, like if you're holding Brandon Hagel, you probably picked Hagel him up for off the Keller. Waiver wire.
Ooh.
Yeah. Awesome. I mean, again... And if you guys, like, anybody listening, like, when you hear a few of these takes and you do, like, the quarter, like, head turn and, like, a side grimace, like, everybody knows the look we're talking about here. Like, that's by design. These are going to sound lopsided because we're not talking about full season Clayton Keller against full season other player. We're talking about these next 4 to 5 weeks. And in those next 4 to 5 weeks, those are not even playing field players. One plays, you know... 40% more games than the other player. One has different deployment. So that's what we're trying to do here. But people, when you see the names, you think full season production, full season rankings, how awesome these players are. But our aperture is narrowed significantly from the point of where we were, very much down to if you're bubble team, your season ends on end of week 22 if you're not in. So that's your timeline, and all your decisions need to be made with that in mind. Anything else, I think, is a bit of a luxury.
So do you guys have, I guess, particular players, assuming let's move a little bit past the trades and, you know, the strategy in that particular facet, but just any guys to punch onto any watch lists for, you know, particular teams going into those playoff pictures?
Yeah, you know what? Like we looked at a couple of teams early on that had really favorable schedules in those playoffs. So we're not going to really go on trade targets here as we spent a significant amount of time on that earlier. But in terms of just pickups.
Or guys, maybe to watch list now. Watch so they're fresh now. In your minds watch when...
Yeah, literally, because we're not going to know which one of these guys is really running and which one isn't at the time. But again, we mentioned how good Washington's schedule is in the playoffs. So we think about... Strome, TJ Oshie, Pacioretty as well, you know, the shot volume that he's been putting up lately, maybe some production follows it along the way, but these will be players that you can acquire in your league. Patches is a great example of, he was so owned when you could stash him on your IR. And the second you move him off the IR, the clock starts ticking. And now it's like, oh shit, this is a difficult hold.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that first week when he was healthy and it was like, wait, he's less than 40% owned.
So, I mean, those are all gettable pieces, I think, from a pickup standpoint in those times. Oilers, there's not going to be much. We talked about how good their schedule is. The reality is there's not much you can pick up. Even the Ekholms and the Fogels of the world are starting to get up significantly in ownership. But those are two gettable pieces on that team. You could look further down on the third line if you're trying to get really deep on that. But the reality is most of that team is owned, and we know how concentrated the scoring is on Edmonton. So there's not going to be a ton of options to pick up there unless you proactively go out and search for one. We also mentioned the Sabres is, again, not a lot of ownership here. And what happens at the trade deadline is going to largely determine some of these players' value for us. But there is a lot of players to look at. That kid line's kind of interesting with Cousins in the middle with Benson and Paterka. They're taking a lot of shots. Some of their metrics, their nerd stats are popping the last few weeks with those players. So, I mean, something to look at for Buffalo. Some rays of light for the Sabres. Kraken, again, we mentioned Kraken earlier. McCann and Dunn are the only members of the 50% club all year on this team in terms of ownership. I think Bjorkstrand just tipped over at like 51 or 52%. Tolvanen obviously had to balance out the universe. I think he's like 49 or 48%. The rest of this team, obviously is available right now and has been all year, so they will probably be available later on into the playoffs. Jordan Eberle is the latest example of a great two-week stream. 4 goals, 5 assists, 12 shots on goal. But like, in the context of this is what the Kraken do, this is a ranked 200 player that for 2 weeks is a ranked 30 player. So we talk about watch lists, some of these guys, you know, Jordan, not knowing what's going to happen in the future, pretty confident Jordan Eberle is not going to be the ranked 30th player in the middle of the playoffs, but he could be, and one of his teammates just maybe. So there's a lot of opportunity to pick up some streamers on the Kraken. Coyotes, we mentioned. Schmaltz seems to be somebody that's perennially available. He's the guy that we always scratch our head and say, why is Nick Schmaltz not more owned than he is? And then you kind of take a look at what Nick Schmaltz does.
Because he's good till he gets hurt.
Yeah, like it's he doesn't really pop for ceiling. So he's kind of like throw a whole bunch of assists and the odd goal together and, you know, a few shots a game and you get like enough. With good deployment to say, my goodness, Nick Schmaltz, whatever percentage, what is he, like 30%?
Yeah, I think it was about 30.
Even lower than that right now. Yeah, so he's an option. He's even doing a little bit less than what he typically does this year. Yeah, 18% ownership for Nick Schmaltz. Yeah. So that's low even. That's below the Schmaltz line in terms of ownership. So there's going to be player. And again, Canucks. We would say watch for these third wheels on this team, the Mikheyevs, the Pugh Suitors of the world. I think Pugh Suitor got his value hammered pretty much with Elias Lindholm joining the team. But that being said, like they rely on all four lines on that team, and their bottom half has given them some pretty timely scoring. So I would expect everybody to contribute on that team, but certainly not with the deployment that Suitor had, you know, over the last week or so. Dakota Joshua is the gift that keeps on giving for bangers, so he might be available. And we've probably spent half this season talking about Ottawa Senators, so there's a bunch of them that you could probably stream as well, too. You know, Norris, Tarasenko, maybe one of the defensemen.
I'll say Tarasenko is someone I keep hearing probably moves at trade deadline.
Does Sanderson just go off injured, or was that a...
Cool for me, who just got him.
Yeah, I know, and both their ownerships ticked up pretty high, too, eh? Like, their
Chickering. Yeah, because with the coaching change, like they were starting to give Sanderson more of a run on a top unit.
Yeah, it's so good for Ottawa in real life that they have such a great and variegated defense core. I don't think any of that goodness translates over into fantasy for their players.
I think the only reason Chikrin's had some spurts, but I think the only reason I'm still holding him where I have him is the trade rumors.
Oh, like we said before, I gotta see. My heart, I don't know if I could take that. Not even that I'm a big Ottawa fan, but that was such a production. I really hope that's not. I want that team to turn it around. There's a lot of good players and a lot of good pieces on that team. There's some good stories there. Like, it's just, I don't, maybe it's the Bills fan to me. I don't like seeing franchises perennially kicked down. And it looked like they were really turning a corner with ownership. And I think they got to get behind the bench settled. But hopefully next year is a year for Ottawa. And I mean, in the meantime, we're getting some production from some of the guys we needed to lean on down the stretch here. Timmy Stews really turned it around. Brady scored in the last couple games. So, I mean, they're starting to do some of the things that we expected of them. But, fellas, if it's okay with you, I was going to pivot really quickly. And we'll go over the Week 26 kind of final week if you happen to be in a league that goes through Week 26. Most of the stuff that we added through week 24 and 25 is going to be applicable to the first 2 weeks of this playoff format. So really kind of just adding in the bit on the end here that's applicable to leagues that start a little bit later and end at the very end of the season. And we mentioned a little bit earlier in the schedule point, week 26 is very odd. It's like a week and it's a little over a week and a half. It's 11 total days. And we start on a Monday. We end on the following Thursday. And there's 76 total games across those 11 games. So it starts off a little traditional, and then we get a lot of balance heading into that last 4 days of the season. So there's some teams with some pretty great schedules for that period of time. We've got a really tough, I mentioned the first portion of that. So let's say the first traditional week of week 26, the Monday through Sunday, we have really light off nights, and we got fairly heavy, heavy nights. So we, our off nights, we start off with 2 games on Monday, 13 games on Tuesday, 3 games on Wednesday, 10 games on Thursday, and the weekend goes 5, 13, and 4. So those off night streams are going to be pretty valuable. We're out of what we saw in week 24, where we, in some cases, only had one game in terms of an option to stream. When you're talking about 3 games, 5 games, 4 games, we're starting to get into some options there. And that final portion of week 26, that 4-day week, you got a lot of balance there. 8 games, 8 games, 6 games, 4 games. Almost every team in the league plays between 1 and 2 games, except for Edmonton. They play 3 games in those final 4 days of the season. But there's going to be a ton of options in that scramble for the finish, guys. Like, there's 5 teams that play 6 games over that final week. Seattle, Calgary, Toronto, Edmonton, and Vegas. Actually, dude, Vegas has the perfect 6-for-6 off-night schedule from the beginning of week 26 all the way to the end of week 26. Every single one of their games that they play is on an off night. And we know Vegas always has streaming options for goaltending. Like, there's 9 back-to-backs over that period for goalie streams. Anaheim, Arizona, Calgary, Seattle, Edmonton are all viable options in terms of hitting one side of that back-to-back with the backup. But the reality, guys, is there's so much uncertainty with all of these individual players, their deployment, the seeding unknowns that we're at. So at this point, it's really speculative to talk about individuals we'd be looking to stream or add. So the week 26 portion, we're going to keep it rather succinct there. I mean, at this point, I think we spent a fair amount of time going over some trade strategy and trade opportunities. I think we did a pretty great deep dive on that schedule and really dug into who can add value both leading into the playoffs as well as during the playoffs. So, like, boys, maybe we Tokyo Drift this van cab into the finish line here and wrap this up.
Well, that's going to do it for us tonight. Thanks again for sticking through all this with us. If we didn't answer any questions or you have questions along the way, once again, Twitter, X, Discord, all those links are in the show notes. Feel free to reach out to any of us, even Craig, who couldn't be here with us tonight. Good night, everyone, and good luck.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Great talking hockey.
We'll pick you up later.